somebody else who's come into the studio to join me today. I have a gorgeous book in front of me. To be honest, it's making me wish it was dinner time sooner. It is called Food Through the Ages, A Popular History. It's written by Mike Gibney, and Mike's a professor of food and health at UCD. Hello, Mike. Thank you so much for coming in and congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much indeed.
I like talking food.
Do you like talking food? Good, so do I. I've done it all my life.
And history as well. In fact, don't tell anybody, but I have a degree in history from UCD. So there you go. But it was a long, long time ago. This was a lockdown project for you. Can you tell me a little bit just about the book and why it wouldn't be necessarily a historical book for serious students?
Okay. I've been in the food and health business all my life, and I have a passion about food, and I had an interest in food history. But all of the books on food history tend to be written for historians. So they document, for example, the decline of the Roman Empire and talk about how food played a role in it and all of that. But if you wanted to just sit down and say, how did potatoes come about? And how did chips and crisps come about? There wasn't a really good book out there on that. And so I started to write this with an intention of writing about both food and dining. And then the dining had to be dropped and I concentrated on the food. And around about the time lockdown started, I went at it very seriously and I've loved it. It's been a fantastic experience.
A great distraction, I'd say.
Oh, absolutely. It kept me going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose lots of books are far too academic. Like, you know, you wouldn't necessarily. What has made this more readable, would you say?
Well, if you look at the start of any chapter, there's a poem. Now, if you had a serious book about history, you wouldn't be sticking poems in.
No.
The idea of a poem is to set the reader in a frame of mind that will be give them the right emotive outlook on food. And it's peppered with fun and jokes and quips about all sorts of people that were good and bad and naughty and kind. But it's I think a lot of people who read it said it's fun to read.
Listen, tell you what's not fun for me is making dinner for kids. It's just a bit of a boring chore. I'm a good woman for the fish fingers. But I suppose, why do you think food, you know, we need to know about how food comes on our plate in the first place?
Well, I think that the more we know about what's in front of us on our plate, the more we can, I guess, appreciate it. And the more we appreciate it, the more we can care about how it impacts on the environment and impacts on our health. For example, if you look at a tomato, it's just a red yolk on your plate that you might put a bit of salt on or in a sandwich. But it has a fascinating history of coming to Europe from when Columbus conquered the Middle America. It was shunned for several centuries because it was believed to be poisonous. And it was only when the people of Naples began to suffer a famine that they took an interest in eating it. And slowly it was bred from originally a greenish type of plant to the red type it is. And of course, it all comes at one time of the year and it's a perishable product. So that's how we get passata and other products that are concentrates of tomatoes, tomato juice. And I just think that knowing a little bit about that and understanding where pasta came from or why is Indian rice different from Chinese rice or a whole host of things helps us have a greater understanding and love of food.
And we mentioned the potato there. Now, we feel as Irish people, we own the potato and rightly so. You know, we've had a very difficult, tough history with the potato. But they came from the Andes. Is that right?
That's right. They were grown in the mountainous regions of the Andes. They were brought to Europe and they were not particularly taken up because they're the same family as deadly nightshade. And deadly nightshade is poisonous and people thought these would be poisonous as well. And the other reason they weren't taken up is that at the time, the prevailing medical wisdom was that foods were healthier the nearer they were to God. Yeah. And so birds were highly healthy for you. So if you wanted to live a good, healthy life, you had a lot of fowl and birds. Anything that grew underground was furthest possible from God.
How wrong were they?
How wrong were they, yeah. So it took a French military pharmacist who was incarcerated in the Franco-Prussian War. And while in jail, he lived on potatoes. That's what he was fed. And he began to realise they were very good. When he returned to Paris, there was a shortage of wheat and the peasants were getting angsty and the royals didn't like that. So they set up a fund to have a prize to see who could come up with an alternative. And he put forward his idea for the potato and was accepted. But the peasants still didn't do it. So what he did was he got 40 acres. He was allocated 40 acres just on the outskirts of Paris. And he grew potatoes and he guarded them at daytime, but not at nighttime. And so the locals went in, stole them, cooked them, ate them, and found that they were doing very well rather than starving. And so it took off from there. And of course, it went all over Europe. But in Ireland, it was the predominant crop. You know, about 36% of all the agricultural land was growing potatoes. And we had five or six times per capita intake of any other country. And so when the blight came to Europe, it didn't damage Europe that much. Now, it did cause a lot of deaths in many countries, and we're trying to forget that, but nowhere near what happened here in Ireland. Mm.
And I suppose when you think of pasta as well, you think it's Italian, but it's actually from North America.
No, North Africa.
North Africa.
Yeah.
So did I say? Yeah.
It was an Arabic food initially, and it's a hard wheat, which means that it's got a lot of gluten in it. And that means you can stretch it this way and that way and make all sorts of shapes out of it. And the Arabs occupied the southern part of Italy for three or four centuries. And they brought pasta with them. And the Italians took it on. And so, as they say in the book, it's as Italian now as Puccini or anything else Italian.
It's interesting because as well, soup is the only food that's found in every single culture.
Every culture has their own soup.
Yeah.
And it's very simple. It's easy to understand because food goes off quite easily. It'll go mouldy or what have you. And in many instances, sticking it into boiling water and making something nice out of it and throwing in a few herbs just makes for a pleasant dish. And so every single culture in the world has a soup, but not every country has a potato, or not every country has a rice, and so on.
And one of the things now, people are going to sit down and they're going to have their pasta tonight, or their potato, or their tomato, depends on what take. They now know something, so we have given a little bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank you for coming in. It is Food Through the Ages, a popular history by Mike Gibney.
Thank you very much.
We've only tipped the iceberg, should we say, or the ice cream float or whatever.
Well, there's plenty of reading for Christmas presents as well in there.
As you said, and we'll take a break.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.